Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 3, Season 8. It is good to be back. Apologies, first and foremost, we won't reach the magical hour on this week's podcast. We're probably going to go over again, I think it's fair to say. I will desperately try and get it back. I know some people have been really kind, tweeted in, said, no, we're enjoying the longer ones and things like that. It's just really, really nice when we're not doing the live programs that we did many, many years ago now, it feels like, but where we were condensed to that hour and we've got people who want to come on and talk and things like that. It's nice to be able to let them open up a little bit, so to speak. So anyway, there you go. Jack doesn't want me mentioning opening up. We'll come to that in a second. Jack's not feeling too good today, so we're going to be really, really gentle with him. Ryan is, of course, always on my right. Before I come to these two guys, though, this week's show, we've got Henry Hope Frost, the man who's been, ironically, probably sat in a very similar desk to Jack, ex-Autosport, various publications, heavily involved, of course, with the Goodwood Festival of Speed and various things like that. So Henry's going to be coming up a little bit later on the podcast. Then we're joined by X Games legend, Rally, American Rally Championship legend, won the second round of the American Rally Association Championship, the Oregon Trail Rally at the weekend, with friend of the show, Robbie Durant, alongside him. Travis Pastrana is going to be coming up a little bit later on the podcast. And also, just to finish off, we're going to have Ian Campbell talking to us about the next round, ironically, again, the second round of the MSA Penistone British Rally Championship. But before we go over to those guys, obviously, we always do the news and stuff at the top of the show, and we always talk about the headlines that are in MN this week. Now, front page today, Jack, is it fair to say, is this a telling front page, or again, are we just taking a punt at this?
That's a difficult question to answer, isn't it? I think Hyundai have made a big play for Andreas Mikkelsen. We've seen him testing the car, so to actually allow him to test the car, I think they're really serious about signing him, and why wouldn't they be? He's such a talent, isn't he? And he's sat waiting in the wings, and Hyundai, as we've said in our papers today, are trying to create some sort of dynasty a little bit similar to VW. So if you're going to do that, the best way to do it is to put the best drivers in as many cars as you can, isn't it?
It is. Good looking so-and-so as well, isn't he?
No comment.
Okay, all right, fine. Rye, again, I feel like it's one of those stories that we feel like we covered all ground. MN have ran it as a front page today, you know, Hyundai plotting this kind of super team. We both agree. I think, in fairness, we all agreed last week we can't see any way outside of Toyota not making a play for him. But this seems quite serious now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And as we mentioned last week, you know, they have been shouting loudest really to get him in the car, get him testing it, and as Jack just said, if they're letting him drive the car, then they are very serious about this, and the fact that they've got him in a car first probably means they're in the hot seat to get him, and it would make an incredibly strong team. You know, talking about running four cars for the remainder of this year, will they run four cars going into next year? Well, I guess that's another discussion, but it would be first of all great to get Andreas back in the championship regularly, and it'd be great for Hyundai to have another all-rounder in the team, and it would make an incredibly strong team. It's interesting, isn't it, because Hyundai have got a great budget. They're investing heavily in a championship. I mean, they're a massively wealthy company worldwide, very successful now in the car industry, and they're making a big play for WRC, but the one thing that they haven't got, arguably, is the world's best driver. So if they can't have the world's best, they seem to be getting everybody else.
It's interesting, and if you scratch beneath the headline, in fairness, Jack, there's you know, Alan Panasti, the Hyundai team manager, is quoted as, you know, saying that, you know, nothing's decided. It's normal for us all to be talking right now. You know, he knows Andreas's management quite well, and they share cups of coffee and things like that when they're in the service park. But you know, one thing I found quite interesting in this is that everybody, I'm quoting directly now from the article, but everyone is talking. It's the same around the service park. There are plenty of opportunities. At Citroën, Chris Meek doesn't have a contract for next year, for instance. I wasn't aware that was true. I must admit, I thought he was still under contract next year.
I wasn't aware of that either, and did my I was sort of intrigued by that as well. But coming back just quickly on what you were saying about Toyota, the sort of, maybe not worrying thing, but the thing that concerns me about that deal is the fact that a as soon as OJ became available, you know, they were the first one to get him in a car, weren't they? They were the first one to have him testing. And we've seen no sign of Mickelson testing a Toyota yet that we know of. And Hyundai have already had him out there. So is that telling of who's in the hot seat to sign him?
I know, because based on that, then Sebastian Ogier will be driving a Toyota this year.
That's also true, but they were the first team to make a play, and they've not made the play first for Mickelson. So does that mean that they're not that interested in signing him?
I've got two trains of thought here. Ryan, do you want to go first, or do you want me to get my two trains of thought?
Stalling for time, by the sound of it.
No. I'll tell you. And you know, whether this is, you know, Tommy has got his finished dynasty going on, and you know, does having a finished passport help in this instance? I'm not entirely sure. You know, maybe that's a big thing for me. So I don't know, but he likes to certainly surround himself with Finns. That's why the team is there and everything else. Obviously, Norway's not exactly, you know, a billion miles away from him, but you know, he's been incredibly loyal to Johanen, and obviously the third car is going to be running from Portugal onwards, of course, as well. So I don't know is the short answer. Ryan Champion.
Well, I think I'm just going over all ground from last week, really. Toyota are the manufacturer that need him the most, in my opinion. You know, Toyota haven't come into this as a short-term venture, and they're the one manufacturer. I mean, okay, we could talk a little bit about Citroën as well, but you know, Citroën have taken the decision to develop the young drivers and bring them through, which Toyota are doing to a degree as well. But I would just imagine that Toyota now, with the way Toyota go about their motorsport, with the effort they put into it, they would want two frontline drivers fighting for the championship as soon as possible. And I certainly think Toyota need him more than Hyundai do. But yeah, I mean, I think we've all got to agree Hyundai seem to be shouting loudest. So it's difficult at the minute to see him going to Toyota. But at the same time, as I said last week, I think they need him more and would regret it if they didn't get him.
If we delve a little bit deeper, Jack, you know, it's quoted as saying that, you know, they wanted the third driver in the car. They didn't want to put Kevin Abring in, and Hayden was back in New Zealand. So does that, and I don't know what we talked about last week with regards to Hayden's setup, and obviously Kevin Abring seems to be kind of slipping off the radar a little bit there. But is that quite telling as well?
I don't know if it's sort of anything to worry about in terms of Hayden. I think, you know, whatever happens with Hyundai, they're going to have four cars if Mickelson joins. So, we did talk a lot about who we would have in the three cars, didn't we, last week? But that was, you know, that's very much a hypothetical situation, because if Mickelson does join, then they're going to have four cars. So none of those three drivers are going to lose their seat. But for next year, and who's scoring points for the team, it's a bit more telling, isn't it? And I think, you know, it's a weird situation where if Mickelson isn't testing for anyone, then all the manufacturers are happy, aren't they? Because they've all got their team, they're all pretty well set. But now he's available and Hyundai are testing him, then, you know, for me, Citroën and Ford have got to make a play for him as well. I know they haven't. Well, M Sport, but you know, you understand what I'm getting at. But yeah, I think they've, you know, if he's there, you've got to make a play for him and you've got to put him in one of your cars. And I think that's what Hyundai have identified, that he is a top talent. And they've got a car there, and it's better to have him in their car than it is to see him competing against them and taking points away from them.
It's something for you, boys. You love a little bit of history, I know, the pair of you. I'll come to Rife first. Do you remember this happening previously, where there was perhaps a top-line driver that was available who suddenly started to look like a viable prospect four events into a season?
The timing of it's unusual, isn't it? I mean, we've seen it numerous times when manufacturers have pulled out. You know, I can think of like the Didier Auriols, the Carlos Sainz's coming on the market. Colin McRae found himself without a drive after the Citroën days, and obviously he drove the Skoda for a while. There was rumours of him going back to Subaru, which unfortunately never came to anything. But it has happened when drivers have really been the result of, or been on the resulting end of manufacturers pulling out. But I think, as we've already alluded to with this, the new rules package this year meant that the teams had an awful lot on, and the cars were going to take a lot of development. They were going to take a lot of running for the first few events. But now everybody's kind of settled into a pattern, and now maybe they've got a little bit more time to focus on who they like ideally in the car. I still think it's surprising that nobody made a big push for Andreas Mikkelsen before the season started. But anyway, like I said, maybe that was because of other pressures. And now things have just settled down. They're turning their attentions to not only this season, but obviously next season as well.
Jack, would you go along with that? Would you say that everybody's now kind of settled? Perhaps, I don't know, I'm paraphrasing what Raj just said ever so slightly, but almost took their eye off the ball with the driver lineup and focused on the cars?
I don't think they've took the eye off the ball. I think the thing that's unique about this situation is, as Ryan rightly points out, we've seen this a lot in history when manufacturers pull out, but very, very rarely have we had a manufacturer as big as Volkswagen pull out as late as they did. And that left everyone scurrying around, didn't it? You know, most people at the point when Volkswagen announced that they were pulling out had already signed all their drivers. So Mikkelsen was in that awkward situation where he hadn't quite got everything sorted for the next year. And, you know, unfortunately for him, Latvala and Ogier were picked up first. So The thing that is unique about this situation is the fact that VW pulled out so late and didn't really leave Mikkelsen with much of a chance to get a seat. The merry-go-round sort of, it was difficult for him in terms of the other two drivers were picked up and he wasn't.
Right, let's kind of draw a line under this one now before we move on. Right, when and where do you see Andreas Mikkelsen in 6 weeks' time?
Just based on the current effort, because the other thing about this is Hyundai have not been shy about about the effort they're putting in to get Andreas Mikkelsen, and clearly if they're willing to do their discussions in public, as they clearly are, I cannot see him going anywhere else now.
Okay, Jack?
I agree with that. I think Hyundai is probably the best car at this point in time. If you're Andreas Mikkelsen and you're looking at the options on the table, I think Hyundai is definitely the best one. And if he wants to come back and he wants to be in contention to win rallies and score podiums, then Hyundai is his best option currently. And that'll be where he goes, I think.
Do you know what? It pains me, but I'm going to agree with the pair of you. It really does. I really wish I could be contrary. And I'll be honest, I really did want to see him at Toyota. I really did. And that's not to the detriment of their driver lineup, but obviously it is in reality. I have massive respect for the work that Johanninen's done, for instance, because that's the one of the question mark, of course, against it. I don't know. I just really wanted to see him in a Toyota, but hey ho, there you go. Boys, it's Rally Argentina this week, and we briefly spoke about it last week. Bex Williams kindly talked a little bit of a preview about the event last week. And there's another piece here, Jack, with regards to Sebastian Ogier desperate to break his Argentinian jinx.
Yeah, he's not winning Argentina, and it's going to be a difficult one again for him because he's leading the championship again. But maybe with the new sort of running rules this year, he's not going to spend as much time sweeping the road, so maybe he'll still have a chance. But it's odd that we're coming to an event that Sebastian Ogier hasn't won, isn't it? And one that he's not been, you know, he's scored well in the past, but never won. So it'll be interesting to see how far the other manufacturers have come and whether, you know, whether the Ford's still in contention for the victory and whether Ogier can put it there.
Right, obviously personally for him, he wants to go and win a rally he's not won before, but if he leaves Argentina still leading the championship, surely that's still a success as well.
Yeah, of course it is. That's Sebastian Ogier all over, isn't it? That's what we saw in Corsica. When the man has a bad weekend and things go wrong and troubles with the car and he comes away with second place and the world championship lead. You know, that seems to be his bad weekends. He just has this uncanny knack of scoring not only points but big points, you know, podium points from rally after rally after rally. And yeah, of course he'll want to win in Argentina, and I think what we are seeing is him getting more and more comfortable with the car. We're still not 100% clear on what he's not been, what has made him feel slightly uneasy about driving the Fiesta, but he clearly hasn't been quite at one with it. And I guess, you know, Volkswagen, he had a lot of time to bed into the car, to really mould the car around him. So it's taken a little bit of time to do that with the M Sport team and the car particularly, but he is getting there now, and I think he's getting faster every rally, and I think you know, he's going to be harder and harder to beat as the season goes through. But as we've seen with Ogier before, if he's in a comfortable position championship wise, he'll do what he needs to do, because ultimately he wants to win the world championship.
Absolutely. Jack, you guys obviously have ran the story with regard to this. We're also some nice quotes from Malcolm Wilson, the guys at M Sport. You know, we spoke about it, I think Bex and I, last week on last week's podcast, with regards to, we can imagine Sebastien Ogier not being backward or coming forward to certainly put Malcolm under pressure for fixes or for tweaks and things like that. And Malcolm Wilson's come out paying tribute to the M Sport staff who've worked kind of right through holidays and everything else.
Yeah, I think, you know, Sebastien Ogier is a winner, isn't he? We've seen it over and over again, and he demands the best from his teams. And, you know, at times that must be difficult for morale and keeping everyone happy. And, you know, if he's criticising the car, or if he's not happy with something, then, you know, that's always going to be difficult. But what we have seen from them so far is, they have worked hard to correct the problems. We've seen Ogier being fairly sort of fairly neutral on the events, not pointing the finger at anyone back at M Sport or you know, being too upset about sort of anything specifically. He's just put his head down and got on with the job, and that's why he's won so many championships. Because if you look at the points, it's incredible for me, because it easily, if you had to put your finger on the best package so far this year, it's Thierry Neuville and Hyundai, and Thierry Neuville's over 30 points behind Sebastien Ogier, and we're going into our, you know, that's after four rounds. So, you know, that just proves to me why he's a champion and why he's going to be a threat all year, whether the car's the best or not.
Can I add to that on what Jack was saying there? And obviously something that Malcolm Wilson talked about at the beginning of the year, you know, having a driver in there, a driver who is maybe critical, maybe difficult internally sometimes, can be an issue for morale unless he's a world champion who's winning rallies and pushing the team forward. You know, I think if it was a fifth or sixth place finisher who was in there maybe complaining a bit, maybe whinging a bit, it's very, very different to having a multiple world champion who you know, if you give him a winning car, will win. And, you know, and I think that's why he really likes the environment he's in now with M Sport, because it's a real people's team, and he can work with people. It's not this big, well-oiled machine like Volkswagen. It's much more personal. And I think, yes, it makes life a little bit difficult sometimes in the team when you've got somebody so motivated and so driven. But ultimately, if it gets results, which I think it will do through the season, then, you know, it's good for both sides.
I guess the other thing is, boys, as well, which is also in the article, is the fact that M Sport have racked up, you know, a podium on every round so far of the WRC. You know, that's, you know, are we going to put that down to driver? Are we going to put that down to team? Are we going to go 50-50? Could we, Jack, do a percentage split, do you think, between the two parties of the responsibility of those podiums?
Yeah, I think that's difficult to do, but, you know, I think, as I said before, I think, you know, they're going to be a threat all year, whether the car's there or thereabouts, or whether the others step forward. We've already seen Citroën taking a massive leap forward, haven't we, at the start of this year. And there's no reason why M Sport can't do that as well, with Ogier at the helm, sort of pushing them forward, as we've spoke about already, and, you know, demanding things off Malcolm quite a lot, I imagine, at the minute, and just trying to make that car perfect and as good as it can be. And, you know, if you're going to put anyone in your car, you know, we're talking about Mikkelsen a lot and where he's going to potentially end up and what he'll do to the team that he goes in. They're all struggling because they've not got this man in their team, and M Sport have got to make the most of that this year. And really, I think they know that, and I think they'll be listening very carefully to Mr. Ogier and making sure he gets everything he wants.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Right, I'll come back to Jack on this in a second, because I know he'll have an opinion on this as well. Do we perhaps underestimate how good a driver, feedback-wise, Sebastien Ogier is? The reason why I bring this up is that last week we were talking about, when Bex was on, she was talking about, you know, asking the question why Yari Matti was chosen over Andreas at Toyota, and it was purely down to feedback and the amount of testing that he's done in different variations of World Rally cars and things like that. And, you know, we've had
Jerry Freeman on, who's been on every show for the last couple of weeks. And there's the last bit of that this week, by the way, folks, talking about testing and what people like to test with and their feedback. Do we perhaps miss out the fact that Sebastian Ogier must have a unique ability to be able to tune a car in?
I think he's just the ultimate professional in what he does. He will go as far as he needs to go to get the tools to do the job. And I think, you know, he is, and we've seen it in all forms of motorsport. You get these characters that will just work incredibly hard, very demanding on the team, but they will, you know, stamp the fist on the table and just push things along until they get what they want. And in return for that, he extracts everything he can from the car. You know, we're just talking there. Yes, it's hard to quantify percentage wise what comes from Ogier and what's coming from M Sport this year. But what Ogier will do is extract the very best from what he's got. And we just talked about, he's had problems on various rallies. And no disrespect to, say, Danny Sordo that we talked about last week. If Danny Sordo's got problems, like Ogier had in Corsica, Danny Sordo isn't going to be on the podium. And that's what we see from Ogier, and maybe even like an Ott Tanak. You know, Tanak, great speed, and he has had his problems, and to be fair, in Monte Carlo, that was an incredible drive. But what I'm saying is Ogier, all the time, will get the maximum from the team, from the car, and get the best result. And behind the scenes, he will work as hard as anybody and harder than most to make sure that he's in the best position.
Jack, can I take his completely and utterly left field? And to be fair, it's Ryan that's just took us down here, so I blame Ryan. Bearing in mind, going back, I know we said we were going to draw a line under it, but with regards to some of Alan Panassi's comments with regards to driver availability and things like that, is not Sebastian Ogier available next year? Wasn't this only a one-year deal?
Yeah, he could well be on the market next year. You know, so that's going to be, that's always been dependent on how this year goes, isn't it, for Sebastian? And if Fiesta was miles off the other cars, I think, you know, it was very possible that we could see him going in a different way next year. But for me, what I've seen so far is, you know, it's been a bit like a sibling relationship between two of them, hasn't it? They've had a bit of a pop at each other at times, but you know, they love each other at the end of the day. If you like, you know, they've done a really good job, I think, in terms of, if you look at the points, you know, spoke about it before, to be where they are. If you'd have given them that at the start of the season with the gap they've got, is pretty phenomenal. And if they can keep that going, that's the only question, isn't it, for the rest of the year? It's how far forward Hyundai and Citroën come, and how close they can get to Ogier in terms of what he's doing. So it's going to be interesting to see. And I think whether he's at Ford next year or M Sport will be down to how he gets on for the rest of the year in terms of where he finishes.
Right, where do you think the line in the sand will come for Ogier, bearing in mind that it is only a 1 year deal?
Yeah, and that raises a few questions in itself, doesn't it? Toyota wanted Ogier. they were the first, as we said, to get him in a car. They wanted Ogier. They probably still want Ogier at the end of the day.
Is that why perhaps the series
exactly
play for Mickelson?
That's what I was coming to. You know, are they thinking, well, look, Andreas Mikkelsen, great driver, but we've got Jari Matti. If we're going to put another driver in, we've got our young drivers, we're developing drivers. If we want another headline front-running driver, the one we want is the best man in the world. So, yeah, it could be the reason. You know, M Sport are doing a great job at the minute, and let's not forget the resources that M Sport have in comparison to the Citroëns and the Hyundais and the Toyotas of this world. You know, M Sport are doing a fabulous job with what they have, and let's just hope that they can put the backing in place for next year that will persuade Ogier to stay, because you know, they're doing a great job this year, Ogier winning the championship, but can they offer him a long-term contract that's firstly is attractive in terms of performance, but secondly as lucrative as what the competition can? It's probably a tall ask at the minute, unless we see Ford coming back in, so let's hope they can do it. But I'm sure it's only going to be a matter of, you know, it's only going to be a few weeks before we start hearing Ogier rumours rather than months, I'm sure.
There you go, folks, a completely different spin on the story, I feel, at this point. And please let us know your thoughts. You know how to get hold of us. It's @absolute_rally on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts. Email us via the website. We've got some emails coming up a little bit later on. www.absoluterally.co.uk, and you can find out to contact us there. Jack, I want to mention a friend of the show, Craig Breen. Nice piece on Craig with regards to start his first rally outside of Europe this week in the C3.
Absolutely, it's nice to see him. Nice to see him getting that opportunity, isn't it? After so many years of working so hard to get to the position he's in now, and he's the top point scorer in Citroën, despite doing one event in the 2016 car and retiring from the other one. So, sorry, he didn't retire, he didn't start, did he? He's missed an event. So, to see him do so well in terms of the championship after that is fantastic. And you know, you can only hope that he keeps building his pace. And you know, I think towards the end of the year we're going to start seeing him threatening for podiums sort of on pace alone, so it's really going to be interesting to see how far he can come this year. And I guess some of that obviously depends on the Citroën as well, which seems to be getting better every week, as we've talked about already.
Right, we all want to see, you know, we all want to see Craig crack on. We also want to see Craig do well, but you know, he is going about it the right way, isn't he? He is just kind of just grinding results out as he learns the car and gets there. Do you think there'll be a point, and you know, funny enough, we'll mention this man again, Andreas Mikkelsen made references, I think it was on Australia last year, of course, where the last event that he was with Volkswagen and he won, where he was finally let off the leash. Where do you think the point will come where Craig is either finally let off the leash or he lets himself off the leash?
Well, we just were discussing drivers and having two number one drivers in a team. And obviously that's something Citroën haven't got at the minute. And I guess in some ways that puts more pressure on the likes of Craig, you know, and Lefebvre as well, because Chris Meek's always going to be pushing for rally wins. He's always going to be, you know, 100% at the front and fighting. But obviously it does bring a risk as well, doesn't it? And even though, you know, Craig's one of the junior drivers in the team, I think, you know, his job this year is certainly to bring the car home and score points. So that actually does fit quite well with his, you know, giving him time to learn. But like you said, eventually he's going to want to get to a point where he can really push for his own results rather than just bringing in the fourths and the fifths and being consistent. So I'm not sure. I think with the structure of the Citroën team at the minute, they'll be quite happy for Craig to keep the consistency, to keep gaining the experience and to bring the results home. You know, maybe that might be for next year. Because I think at the minute, if he was pushing but making mistakes, it would leave the team quite short in terms of the manufacturer's standings.
And of course, the pressure on building cars as well. Jack, I'll come back to you. Chris Meek, very happy to be considered to have that rally favourite tag as well.
Yeah, obviously he is going to be, isn't he, really? It's a no-brainer, but it's going to be interesting to see how the Citroën engine performs in Argentina. I know it's probably not going to be quite as big a problem as it's going to be in Mexico, but it'll be nice to see that sort of, nice to see how that comes along and whether they have got all that sorted. But yeah, I think, you know, the way we've talked about in the past few weeks about how Citroën have been improving, and you have to say that they're the package that is sort of has the most momentum, isn't it? So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether they can, whether they'll run away with it at the front, or whether Hyundai and M Sport are going to keep up. But yeah, they're the team with the momentum. And Chris, although he went out in Corsica, was, you know, at the point he went out, was the quickest driver. So, you know, looking at the rest of the year, it looks quite positive for them, doesn't it? And although the points, as we've talked about already, you know, if you're going for a championship, then OJ's got the championship sort of right where he wants it, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Just want to plough through a couple more bits and pieces. Mads Osberg, I've seen his car fly out a little bit early. He's been testing out in Australia, I was going to say then, out in Argentina. He's, of course, because he's not a manufacturer driver, he can, of course, test in the, you know, there's no, he can test outside of Europe and things like that. And, right, are we perhaps dismissing someone like a Mads Osberg in a 2017 car on Rally Argentina?
It depends which Mads Osberg turns up, doesn't it? And I mean that in the nicest possible way, but you know, we've seen flashes of brilliance from Mads over the years with fantastic speed, and we've seen events where he just hasn't really featured. He's not had a lot of time comparatively in the new cars, so yeah, I think he could certainly be there or thereabouts, but whether we see him fighting consistently at the front over the 3 days of the rally, I think that's maybe slightly less likely, you know, with the driver lineups that we've got in the works teams. But interestingly enough, you said, you know, I saw a tweet earlier about the car being flown out to Argentina, and I think that's one thing that we forget about WRC is just the amount of logistics behind it, and the undertaking, particularly from a private team, to run a 2017 car, to fly it across the world, it's a huge logistical challenge. And I mean, Tony, you'll know better than me, roughly speaking, what would it cost to fly a car to Argentina?
I am not contractually allowed to discuss that.
All right, well, let's say we're going to fly a car to Brazil then, shall we? How much would it cost to fly a car to Brazil? If it was for Dakar, say, you know, you're flying a Dakar car to South America, how much might that cost?
Oh, about 12 grand.
It's not to be sniffed at, is it, when you've got to fly, what, 10, 12 people, even for a private team as well, on top of that?
Plus, you've got plus on that with your spares and everything else as well. That is purely a stripped-down car on a pallet. Or a stripped down buggy on a pallet, but I'm not going any further than that.
No, but you know, Dakar obviously runs in South America every year, so it's an interesting comparison.
It certainly is. It certainly is, boys. I'm going to put you all on the spot as Ryan's just done it to me. Jack, as your sick boy, you're going to get your note to go very, very early shortly. But I want to get your Rally Argentina predictions.
Okay, I think Chris Meek's going to win the event. I think Sebastian Ogier is going to finish second, and I think Yari Mattia-Latvala is going to finish third.
Yari third and Ogier second. Okay, and that's Jack. Ryan Champion?
Well, I'm sticking with, as I said last week, Chris Meek for the win.
Yeah.
But then I think things get pretty tight, and I'm not quite sure where to go next, to be honest. You see, you always expect Ogier to be up there, don't you? And I want to put Neville and Padden on the podium, but I just think Ogier will be there in the middle of it. So, pick your next two from those three.
Right. Okay.
I'm not having that.
Is that a cop out?
Yeah, that's a massive cop out.
All right. I'm gonna go. Me. I'm gonna go. Neville. I'm gonna go Ogier, and I would like to see Padden prove me wrong, but we'll see.
Okay. And I'm not going to tell you, because it's my train set, as Ryan pointed out the other week. No, I'm joking. I am going to go Chris. I am going to go Neville. And I'm going to go Yari. There you go.
I mean, it was easy for you because you asked Jack and I first, and then he didn't lift.
No. I've made notes.
You just cherry picked our top three.
Anyway, listen, boys, we need to crack on because we've got our next guest lined up. So we're going to do Jack's any other business first.
That was putting me on the spot, wasn't it? We received some information this week, didn't we, Tony, from a very nice gentleman called Bertie Redfern.
Great listener to the show. Thank you, Bertie. We always appreciate your always, correspondence.
Always getting involved on Twitter as well, which is nice to see. And you know, it's always nice to have a bit of debate outside of the show as well as on the show as well, isn't it? That's what it's all about at the end of the day. And Bertie did send over some documents from the 1992 Lombard RAC Rally, which was my first rally that I ever went to at 6 weeks old, which is probably that's going to tell you how old I am. And yeah, we probably shouldn't go to that road, should we? But I thought, as soon as Bertie had been so nice to send in the information, we should run down a few of the people who are in the event and sort of look at the results. So, do either of you know who won that event?
1990.
Kankanen.
No, it wasn't Kankanen. He was the pre-event favourite, in fairness, but he was on the podium. He was third.
Carlos Sainz.
It was Carlos Sainz in a Toyota Celica Turbo four-wheel drive ST185, which I've not just read out from EWRC at all.
And then didn't he win the championship that year as well?
But the interesting one for me on that result sheet was
the Barry McGuigan challenge.
That was quite good, wasn't it? We read about that you know, Bertie quite kindly sent over. And have you got that in front of you, Tony? It'd be good to hear about that.
The Barry McGuigan challenge, which had celebrity drivers in. Sorry, I was being facetious, Jack. Go on, you were making your point. Go on.
No, I thought it was quite interesting. Was it a 140 break Nova, I think, remember, from reading the stuff that Bertie sent over?
Yeah, Barry McGuigan, and there was quite a few. There was, when you say proper rally crews as well, Louise Aitken Walker, Tiffany Dell, of course, former Top Gear, and a friend of Ryan's, no doubt, in the Cosworth 4x4. And is it really interesting? 70% of the 160 car entry was from the host nation. I think that is a brilliant statistic. Thank you, Bertie.
That'd be nice to go back to, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But the final thing I wanted to point out about that event was Ari Vatanen finished second with Bruno Berglund on notes in a Subaru Legacy. And I don't think I've seen many things more spectacular. I actually saw it. I don't remember it, but obviously actually was there. And to see Ari Vatanen in a sideways Legacy is pretty awesome. So it was nice to see him on the podium as well.
There you go. Very quickly, your one, Ryan Champion.
Well, a couple of things. Thanks to those from last week who tweeted in their interest in rally cars. We were trying to keep it to WRC, but the one that did make me laugh was the minivan doing the Manx one year. So yeah. Thanks for that. I like that.
My first ever car. There you go.
Was it really?
It was
suit a minivan.
I had a minivan. That was my first car. DD340T. That was the registration of it. There you go.
And just venturing off topic slightly, we occasionally do that with this show. We are strictly speaking rallying, but Jack's written a nice piece in Motorsport News this week about Billy Monger, who was the young Formula 4 driver who was badly injured at Donington about 10 days ago now. And obviously there is, if you haven't seen the fundraiser for him, get involved with it, give him a few quid, because he's going to need all the help he can get. Fundraising is amazing at the minute at £750,000. Wow. Which is a fantastic effort by motorsport as a whole.
Wow. Folks, I'm going to just do a little bit of admin for my end of the business this week. A couple of things. We were hoping to have Travis Pastrana on, who of course won the Oregon Trail, which we previewed last week with the guys from ARA. Mega battle with David Higgins. David tried to battle back, didn't quite come through, and Robbie Durant and Travis Pastrana won the second round of the ARA championship, which is proven to be quite successful. And a lot of it is coming down to tyre wear, which we talked about last week. All being well, folks, we will have Travis with us next week. We're working towards it anyway at the moment. And congratulations, friend of the show, Molly Taylor, second round of the Australian Rally Championship. She had a right ding-dong with Harry Bates and trading times all the way through. I think Harry had some problems towards the end, and Molly came through. Still not leading the championship, but I'm sure enough it's going to be. Will she defend the title? She's got to, hasn't she? She's got to. So a couple of little bits of admin there. And one last thing, boys. Incredibly sad. There was some incidents over in Europe last week. And we just wanted to, I suppose, just take a moment, really, just to acknowledge the fact that there was some issues and some fatalities on two events last week. Our thoughts are with the organisers and with the families of all those concerned as well. Very, very sad. And as I say, all our thoughts are with all concerned. Anyway, it's unfortunately we need to push on. Jack, you're allowed to go now and go and get well, basically.
Thanks. Yeah. Can I add one thing before I go?
Of course you can.
I thought it was really good for Ryan to point out Billy Munger and that sort of all that situation. But there is actually a direct rallying link between the fundraising campaign and rallying, because last weekend, I'm definitely not going to try and pronounce it because it's a Czech rally. Is it Vltava? Which Jan Kopecky won. But there was that rally also had a historic element. And if like me, you're a fan of circuit racing as well as rallying, you'll like to know that Eric Comas won that event in a Lancia Stratos. And he does quite a lot of classic rallies around Europe. Famous for driving a Minardi and things like that in Formula 1, but also does a lot of rallying now. And also on that entry list in a Lancia Stratos as well was Steve Perez, who people in Britain will know quite well for driving his Lancia around. But Steve sort of Steve approached Eric and got him to run some stickers on his car for to sort of try and raise awareness of Billy's fundraising fund. So it was really nice to see two Lancia Stratoses in the Czech Republic last weekend, both sporting stickers to Billy Munger. And Steve, obviously his son, competes with the same team that Billy competes in. So there's lots of direct links there, but that was really nice to see.
Fantastic. Jack, thank you for that. Listen, get well soon, and same time, same place next week for you.
Absolutely. Hopefully I'll be a bit more compass mentis next week.
Good lad.
Actually come up with some sense.
Good lad. You always come up with sense. Don't worry. Folks, we're going to go to a little break now, and then Ryan and myself will be back with motoring journalist, presenter, everything, all things to all men really in motorsport, Henry Hopefrost.
This is Absolute Rally. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And folks, thanks for sticking around. We think it's worth it. We've got Henry Hopefrost joining us for the first time, hopefully not the last time. Hello, Henry.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're good. We've got to do an official kind of comment now with regards to Jack Bengen. Jack was going to be with us. He was ill in the first section, and without you, he wouldn't be where he's working now. That's what he said. That's a big call.
Yeah. But I will be telling him that that's quite unfair that he's not here.
Yeah, I would. I would, to be fair. I'd text him.
I will. Yeah. These kids, eh? These kids.
Kids are today. Now, Ryan Champion is over on my right-hand side, as you're on my left. So you know Ryan quite well, of course.
I do. I do indeed. Yeah, he tells me he's a good bloke.
He's all right. Just don't ask him to buy you a drink.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
He can drive a bit, I think, from memory.
Yeah, he can. He can't buy bottles of red wine, though.
No.
I can confirm that to you, Henry.
It's a bit of a personal assassination, really, so far.
Sorry, I forgot you were there, Ryan Champion. Yes. I forgot you were there, Ryan Champion. Sorry, over to you, Ryan.
Just because Jack Bengen isn't here, you don't have to treat me like the whipping boy. So, Henry, here to have you on the show. To those of a rally fans that are listening that maybe don't know you, you're obviously a journalist that's been around all of motorsport. And I like to think I know quite a lot about rallying, but you match me on rallying, but then know equally as much about MotoGP, sports cars, F1 and everything else. And I don't quite know how you manage all that. But tell us about your early interest in rallying and how did you get involved?
Well, I've always been a massive rally fan. It's one of the first disciplines of motorsport that I first paid attention to, and that's probably because I used to bunk off school and go and watch the RAC, which, as you remember, in the good old days, started at the weekend and ran through for sort of most of the following week with the proper stages. So what I basically wouldn't go back to boarding school on a Sunday night after being at home for the weekend in late November, and I would be squirreled off around the country by my old man, who told school that I was ill, and we'd go and watch the RAC. And my very first memory of doing that was in 1980, when I was 10. I can see you working out how old I am now. And seeing Henry Toivonen win in the Sunbeam Talbot Lotus in what was a Group 2 car, beating Hannu Mikkola in a Group 4 Escort, which I just thought was immensely fever. And he was the youngest winner of a World Championship Rally at that time. And I thought at that point, this is something I have to be involved in for the rest of my life, in whatever capacity that turns out to be. So it kind of started there, really. It's a long time ago, that, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I remember that rally well, because that's also had a massive influence on me, Toivonen, in the Sunbeam particularly. But you actually, you decided you wanted to go into a career in motorsport, and you actually got a bit of work experience in motorsport.
Yeah, I did. My folks live just outside Banbury, and we got to know David and Karen Richards quite well. So I ended up doing some work experience at ProDrive when I was about 16, 17, which it was like being in a film set. It was like being on the set of some sort of James Bond secret underground lair where they were preparing these incredible cars for some sort of chase with the baddies. I mean, you know, the old cliches about being able to eat your lunch off the workshop floor, and the level of technology and the attention to detail and the focus and the understanding and the wizardry for a guy who was, well, I was 16, 17 and he knew very little about it, was totally eye-opening. And of course, it just compounded my problem about wanting to work in the industry. By that point, I decided I was too fat and too poor to be a driver. So I would have to be, what could I be? I could be an engineer, I could be a mechanic, I could be a journalist, I could be a PR. And so I kind of got into the media side of it in the early 90s. A very lucky break. And I'm constantly reminding myself every day when I wake up in the morning, and in that slightly blurry-eyed state when you first wake up and you think about the day ahead, what am I going to be doing today? I'm going to be going to work. How brilliant. So it's been a paid hobby for 25 years, and I will never lose sight of that fact. And I'm still, to this day, slightly sort of bamboozled by all of it sometimes. I'm starstruck still when I'm interviewing Ari Vatanen or Valter Röhl or whoever it is, because these are guys I used to bunk off school as a kid to watch. And now I'm sitting down having a beer with them, talking about Quattros or Lancia 037s or whatever it happens to be.
Now, like you said, you've moved through this. I think we first bumped into each other. Would it be about 97 when you followed the British Rally Championship for Autosport? Was it about that?
Correct. Time? Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you were a junior then, weren't you? In a little Peugeot then?
We were both fairly young at that point, but anyway, you know, time goes on. At 96 I was in a Peugeot, 97 was my first efforts in a Subaru. But, I remember meeting you then, and obviously you were at Autosport. You spent a lot of time at Autosport. But sort of tell us how your Autosport career progressed, and tell us what you're up to now.
Well, I joined the magazine three quarters of the way through a degree course. I bumped out of college because I responded to an advertisement in the back of the magazine of someone to sell advertising space. And in those days, the labor turnover, certainly in editorial, was quite small. The old kind of heroes of 1980s Autosport, they were still there and they weren't going anywhere. There was no room for me. So I joined the advertising department, did that for a couple of years. Really enjoyed it, built up quite a good contact base. You know, you're kind of learning how the sport works from a commercial point of view. And then an opportunity came up in the middle of 95 to do editorial. So I did that, and it was getting on for 20 years on and off that I was basically at the coalface putting together the Bible of motorsport, the oldest, most famous weekly motorsport magazine in the world. And of course, it opened lots of doors for me to do other things on a freelance basis, whether it was writing, commentating, doing PR, that sort of thing. So really, I have Autosport to thank for everything. And even though I'm not involved directly with the magazine anymore, I still do bits and bobs for them. And that kind of opened the floodgates, really, for everything I do. And if it moves and makes a noise, as you know, Ryan, I'm interested. I love it, and I kind of make it my business to understand what it was, how it was, why it was, going back to, well, hundreds of years, really.
Now, you've broadened your horizons a little bit. Now you do some work for that wonderful estate in the south of England, just near Chichester.
That's the one.
And you have been, as you said, I guess fortunate, but you've done a lot of features over recent years with some of the the world's best known drivers, best known cars, and this doesn't necessarily have to be relating just rallying specifically, because it gives our listeners an idea of what you've got involved with. But give us an idea of some of the features and the interviews that stick in your head that you've done over the last few years.
Oh, mate, that's like asking me to choose between my children. It's impossible. I've spoken to lots and lots of great people. Great Formula One champions, John Surtees, Jackie Stewart, Nigel Mansell, absolute heroes of mine. And the same is true with the rally guys. Ari Vatanen and I've done lots of things with, had a wonderful sort of very impromptu interview with Valter Röhrl at Autosport International a few years ago, he was spotted working for, I think he was working for a suspension company. And somebody from Autosport's exhibitions department spotted him and came over and said to us, would you like to have Valter Röhrl on the stage? And I said, obviously, yes, now, please. So he was commandeered from this stand and came on the stand and chatted to me about, you know, his amazing career in rallying and of course, to some extent in racing as well. I thought, this is surreal. This is absolutely surreal. This is a guy who won the world championship in that first year that I made my first pilgrimage to the RAC rally when I was 10 years old. It's just amazing, to be honest. But I've been in cars with great people as well, and had a sort of a first-hand bird's eye view, if you like, of what goes on at the very top level. And it just sort of, again, compounds the problem that I am a frustrated racing driver, a frustrated rally driver, who has been able to access what these guys do from a different point of view. And it just makes me look up to them even more. I'm sure if you took me around stage in the Scooby Ryan, I'd be enormously impressed and appreciate that I couldn't do that. I think that works at various levels, doesn't it? From sort of national rallying right up to kind of international single seaters.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And when you see, regardless of the field of motorsport, when you see what the top drivers do with the cars, it's incredibly exciting. And something I always love to do is jump in with a driver, a professional driver, because you're always blown away by what they can do, even if you like to think you can pedal a bit yourself. But so you're involved with that with the fantastic Goodwood estate now that that. One event after another just turns into an incredible success. Now really three big profile events during the year, with the Goodwood Festival of Speed, the Revival, and also the members meeting now. And that must lead to some interesting days at work as well.
Yeah, I mean, I walk around that place in a sort of a daze, really. It's like being in a sort of movie scene, isn't it? A sort of fantastic foray back into a whole different era, and I'm almost waiting for the tap on the shoulder by the guy in the suit and the dark glasses saying, come on mate, come on, enough's enough, let's go, it's time you grew up and got a proper job. But yeah, Goodwood is a wonderful thing, and it really encapsulates that huge wide remit of motorsport fever. I mean, the Festival of Speed has every sort of well-known car that's ever competed, whether it's on track or on a rally stage or in NASCAR or IndyCar or anything like that. And the idea is that we are catering for as many people as we can and showing a cross-section of disciplines down the ages. I mean, and the thing about Goodwood, it's got such a reputation now, and it has such a standing in the motorsport calendar that nobody ever says no to Goodwood. That's a wonderful thing. If we want a car and or a driver or rider to come, they always come. They never say no. There are one or two infamous exceptions, guys who have never been and still won't come, but we won't go there.
Henry,
in the main.
Henry, do you think that could be down to the fever?
Yeah, very possibly. Very possibly, yeah. But you're right. But yeah, Goodwood is an incredible thing, and I'm very lucky to be involved sort of behind the scenes, helping to create content, come up with ideas, come up with themes, anniversaries, significant milestones, writing stories for the digital platform, which is really a fan site. Goodwood Road and Racing it covers everything. And we do historical stories, we do videos, we do galleries, we do road tests, we do all sorts of different things. And it caters for that huge cross-section of interest that the punters bring to the event. Whether it's the people who want to come and see the Michelin supercars, people who want to come and see old Group B rally cars, people who want to see the contemporary Formula One cars, etc. You know what it's like. There's something for everyone wherever you look. It's like a massive time warp event, isn't it?
Henry, do you know what? Genuinely, and I've listened to, obviously, first time you've been on our show, and you're more than welcome to come back whenever you want. I always say this to people, the door is genuinely always open. A couple of things, obviously, for me listening there, because I'm kind of listening as if people are going to be listening as the podcast has been listening, if you like, because obviously you were talking to Ryan. But one thing two things: work ethic and your genuine love for what you do. As if you do genuinely feel like someone's going to come and wake you up and go and put you in a proper job sometime soon. And I think that's It's so refreshing to hear that.
Yeah, it's such a cliche, but and I don't want to sort of, you know, there's a fine line, isn't there, between sort of modesty, arrogance, confidence, and some other fancy word.
Oh yeah,
I'm just a fan. I'm just a super fan, and I'm just very lucky. I've got good friends who are real enthusiasts, guys I went to school with, and we used to sort of just hide in the corner and read Autosport or Motoring News or Motorsport magazine as though it was the last copy on the planet, and you know, we just didn't give a you know what about double chemistry and the French vocabulary and the periodic table. All we were interested in was what was going on in this sort of glamorous, almost sort of untouchable world out there, and I could just as easily as the next guy have missed the boat or not spotted that advertisement for staff on Autosport, or, you know, you just don't know, do you, which path you're going to take when you come out of college. And I just got really lucky. And sometimes I sit in my office on a Monday morning after an event and I start to type an invoice just to whoever has hired me to talk or write. And it feels slightly vulgar to be expected to be paid to do this. You know, something's gone wrong somewhere.
Brilliant. Henry,
I hope they're not listening.
Well, just to put any doubt out of your mind, folks, we're not paying Henry for doing this, just in case you were wondering. But I've got a couple of things I need to ask you about, which, to be fair, a couple of them being prompted by Ryan. I did say it slightly tongue-in-cheek before, and if it was out of character, I apologise. Hashtag fever.
Hashtag fever. Let me tell you the story of fever. Fever, I didn't invent the adjective or the noun fever in a motorsport context, but I sort of picked it up and ran with it after it had sort of died a death. It started on Autosport in 1980 when the then advertising manager, Stuart Dent, had a poster on the wall of Gilles Villeneuve in a Ferrari 312 T5, which was the rubbish car in 1980. And he was completely sideways coming out of Casino Square at Monaco. And it said on the poster, "Abbiamo la febbre," which in Italian means "we've got fever." And this was on the wall, and apparently it stuck. And everything became fever. People had fever. People talked about fever. Cars were described as fever. Incidents and moments and great bits of driving were described as fever. And it stuck. And then Stuart left in the early 90s. I heard about this story, became friends with him. And I started to say it all the time, and still do, of course. And it sort of stuck. So I sort of feel partly responsible for it.
Is it going to be one of those, you know, where you kind of Google stuff now, and you kind of, and there'll just be a picture of you if we Google fever?
Well, let's hope not. I don't want to be held responsible for damaging the internet.
Listen, I know we've only got you for a limited time today, and I really, really appreciate your time. I've got one last question before we let you go, and I think it was tweeted to us as well with regard to predictions for the WRC for 2017. Of course, this unique season where we've got all the teams with these super cars, these super drivers. How do you see, bearing in mind we're only four events in, the whole rest of the season panning out?
It's magic, isn't it? Ryan knows this, that it's more than 30 years since the first four events of a WRC season were won by four different manufacturers. It was 1986, of course, in case you've forgotten. But how brilliant to have Ogier winning in Monte, Jari Matti Latvala winning in Sweden, Chris Meek winning in Mexico, and Thierry Neuville winning in Corsica for the four different, I use the word works, they're not all works, are they? Teams, the, you know, the big boys. It's extraordinary. You couldn't have made it up. I never imagined Toyota would win on their comeback so soon. I thought Citroën was struggling, and then Meek pulled off that staggering win in Mexico despite banging his way through a car park on the last stage. And Thierry Neuville having had lots and lots of pace and no luck in the first two rallies, winning on the tarmac in Corsica. It's been brilliant. Who do I think is going to win? I think Sébastien Ogier is the best all-round driver. I think he will win a fifth straight Drivers' Championship. He's 13 points ahead, isn't he, after four rounds? And he hasn't been off the podium yet this year. And I think that's significant. Manufacturers is interesting because you've got to ask yourself whether Ott Tanak in the other Ford Fiesta is going to do a better job than the support acts in the other teams, whether that's in a Toyota, unless he gets replaced by Andreas Mikkelsen, of course, but that's a different story, or Danny Sordo in the other Hyundai. I think it's going to be really nip and tuck in the Manufacturers' Championship. I'd love to see M Sport win another one. They haven't won it for 10 years or so. And they're still a privateer team, aren't they?
Yep.
They have technical support from Ford, but that is a privateer team. And what Malcolm's built up in Cumbria is absolutely staggering. I'd like to see M Sport win. And for the same reason, I'd like to see Ogier prove that he can win for another team in another car without the might of Volkswagen behind him.
Can I ask?
So I think, yeah, an M Sport double. I sort of think, stroke hope.
Can I ask a question based on that then, if you don't mind? Right.
No.
If that happens, will that rob us the opportunity of Ford ever coming back as a full time entity then?
That's a very good question, isn't it? And we could get bogged down in the politics and the economics of whether Ford is getting enough publicity out of this by not being involved directly, or whether they need to be involved. I guess the answer to your question, Tony, is if they get beaten, even with Ogier at the wheel, perhaps Malcolm needs Ford to come back and throw all its sort of technological nous at it. I don't know. The Ford Motor Company is a beast, isn't it? It's a big sort of complicated monster. And I wouldn't like to sort of pretend I fully understood how it worked. But it is a good question. I don't know whether does the man in the street looking at a Fiesta with Ford badges all over it think that they're not involved?
That's a very, very good point.
You look at the Yaris, it's covered in Toyota badges. You look at the C3, it's covered in Citroen badges. There's nothing discernible when I watch a rally, just pretending for a moment that I don't know what I know, that is not a full-blown turbo Ford effort, is there?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's
on a smaller scale, when Citroën pulled out and Mark van Dalen ran the cars under the Kronos banner, you know, let's not mess about. That was still a Citroën, wasn't it? And yeah. Citroën reaped all the rewards and ran off with all the trophies, even though they'd stopped putting their hand in their pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened in Formula One as well. You know, Renault did it, rebadging engines and stepping back, if you like, but still being involved. So they get all the kudos without the big bills.
Henry, would you come back and do this again with us maybe another time where we've got you for a bit more time?
Yeah,
because I think this would be fascinating. Yeah. I think I would love to talk about this more with you. I really, really would. So is that okay? Can we bring you back
anytime
again?
Anytime you like.
Perfect.
Yeah, please do.
Fantastic. Listen, we will get you back soon. I know you've got to go on errands now, but folks, thank you for sending in the bits and pieces for Henry. We're going to go to a small break.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. It's good to be back, one with a friend of the show that's been on before, and one with a man that is a multiple X Games champion, a multiple American Rally champion, the man behind Nitrous Circus, And I'll be honest with you, I got tired just reading about what this man's done over the last few years. One that we all know and one that we all love. Travis Pastrana, welcome for the first time to Absolute Rally.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Listen, we've wanted to get you on for a while. Say we've got Robbie there as well. And this is a first for our Absolute Rally listeners. I've never had a full crew before. So as I've just been talking about off air, this is a little bit of a first for us in every sense of the word. So thank you first for joining us. I wanted to congratulate you first on your win at the weekend. We had the guys on from the American Rally Association last week who've been putting so much time and so much effort into getting this championship going. And you guys going back has been a real shot in the arm for them.
No, really, really excited. I mean, you know, it's my first full season since 2011. Or 2010. So, you know, was kind of came in the last year with Robbie, and we had a really rough couple of goes. I mean, I've got a reputation for crashing, and I think we broke the roll cage hitting so hard right on his side, first rally.
Wow.
And, you know, then weren't really competitive with, David Higgins is just, you know, he's been my mentor and the guy that I've really looked up to and been trying to catch, but we weren't on pace. So coming into this year, we had our work cut out for us. So to get a win already in the second round of the championship, you know, tied for the points lead right now with David is awesome for me.
Because you've been busy. We know you do other things. You know you do some fantastic things, X Games and things like that, obviously, with the Nitro Circus. But you've still been driving, haven't you? It's NASCAR and things like that. So you're always driving something. But does that get you ready for rally?
I think the more you drive, the better. You know, any seat time, any wheel time is really good. You know, David, honestly, when he started racing with his son Matthew, shifter karting, I could tell his times improved rallying. I mean, David's always driving everything, so it's been difficult. I mean, when we're on Nitro Circus on the tour, we stop by every go-kart track we can. We probably hit 3 go-kart tracks a week on tour. But it's not a rally car. And then, you know, obviously you have Polaris Razors here at the house, and we're always driving the stuff around back and in off-road trucks. But at the end of the day, it's not the rally car. It helps. But it's, you know, it's one of those things, like any driver can be pretty close if you give them enough time around the circuit. And any top driver anyway.
Absolutely.
But when you have to work with a co-driver and drive stuff you've never seen before, or, you know, you had 2-pass recce or 1-pass at some of the rallies, which is extremely tough, racing against David, who is not only a great driver, but has, you know, basically been racing the last 6 years on these stages. So, Robbie and I definitely have our work cut out for us, but I feel like, you know, definitely putting in the time this year to make it as competitive as we can.
Robbie, I'll bring you in at this point. You know, Travis, by his own admission, he can be a little bit wayward, a little bit ragged from time to time. How do you put a rein on somebody that's this quick, this talented, and coming back to that? It's almost like a disciplined kind of drive, really, isn't it? Because you're delivering pace notes, of course, which all our listeners know about. Of course they do. But how do you get somebody refocused from not having somebody alongside them to suddenly having somebody in their head, talking to them, telling them where they're going?
Well, hello again, first of all, and thanks for having us on. But it's a good question. Firstly, it did help massively. I've raced against Travis in the States over the years. And in fact, he beat me to a championship 10 years ago, I think. So we'll try and turn it around this year. But it's tough. I knew the team a little bit. I knew Travis a little bit. But until you work with someone that closely and sit in with them, you don't really know what to expect. So we had a little bit of a relationship and then had to put the time in to really understand what the other one was doing and how they were going to do it. And to be honest, as you said, the talent and speed and experience is all there, and we just got to package it so that we can go and get the best out of it on every stage of every rally. And to be honest, this weekend was the first time we'd really done that, hit the ground running with a good test and amazing preparation and really got every decision right and really made the most of every corner, really. And when you're sort of competing for you know, tenths of seconds over long 12, 15 mile stages as we were this weekend. You have to get every decision right, and this time it went our way.
Travis, Robbie's just spoke there about decisions that were made. One thing I found fascinating, I looked at the opening round, I was following it closely, to be honest with you. I know some of the guys in the Canadian Championship as well, and there was decisions and on the opening round, which was Pierce Nerge, I believe I've got the pronunciation right there. You took a tyre gamble on that one as well, along with what David did, where you went with snow tyres. It didn't quite work out for you on the opening round, but you also took a tyre gamble on this one, and it's fair to say that's probably what the difference was.
No, if you take away the tyre gamble that we used on the first day, David beat us by 2.7 seconds.
Wow. Okay.
So if you take away those two stages, but luckily that gamble worked. It was wet, it was raining. There was a lot of mud, on the dirt section, but there was quite a bit of tarmac on those first couple of stages. And I looked at Robbie, I'm like, we have to go tarmac tires. And, I think David honestly might have been playing a little bit of strategy, thinking, look, we're not going to crash on dirt tires. We're not going to get stuck. We're not going to do anything stupid. And, you know, he didn't necessarily mind starting day two with a second or 2 second or a couple second deficit, because then he could go second, see our braking line, see what we were doing, not find any of the problem areas first, because there was a lot of rain and some questionable areas on how the roads were going to be. But I don't think he expected that we would take 12 seconds out of him on those first two short stages.
It's just about, one thing that isn't renowned over obviously in the American Rally Association Championship is tarmac stages. Is that where perhaps your background over the last few years really came into its own? Obviously, we've just been talking about all the things you've done in the off period of not going rallying, being on a circuit, being on a track, second nature at the moment, I guess.
Well, what's really funny was before I raced NASCAR, I know everyone over there is laughing. They're like, come on, circle racing. But I was absolute horrid on pavement, especially with slicks. X Games was always run pavement, but on dirt tires, which was kind of weird, but it felt more like dirt that way, kind of loose and all over the place. I've always done well with sideways, with, correcting stuff. And even from a kid growing up, just in the farm, we were always just sliding everything around. So when it came down to pavement, none of my background was pavement. Even when I raced supermoto, which, motorcycles on pavement dirt, I struggled so bad on the pavement. So I think we did, it was better this year. We only lost on those three pavement stages, this year. That was on the last day. We lost 0.2 of a second to David, and both going pretty hard. There's one downhill stage. I know it was one of the most scary stages of my life. I don't know if Robbie agrees, but even downhill, I was like, this is horrible.
Looking for an excuse to slow down, I think, normally when it gets horrible going downhill. But Robbie, if I can bring you back in at this point, we've just been talking about tire strategy and things like that. I guess this is something that maybe we take for granted in other parts of the world, that, obviously, especially on tarmac, of course, people will go out on, slicks or whatever, on full tarmac events and stuff like that. We don't have a lot of mixed events. So where did the decision come from? I'll ask you first, Rob, to run the tarmac tires as opposed to running the gravel tires as David did.
Well, on the Friday night, they do a few, on this event in Oregon, they do a few stages, spectator stages around Portland International Raceway, which is great fun. I've been there a couple of times. Travis has been there a few more times than me, but there was enough. Both of us have done a little bit, me a little bit, Travis a lot, of X Games type stadium events where you have split surfaces, split tires, or maybe tires that you're told to run, but the surface is split. There was enough. Both of us leaned towards the decision we made, and I think there was enough to be made up on tarmac. And as Travis said, there was not enough that was going to catch us out. There wasn't enough mud or really slippy, horrible stuff that the gravel tire could claw back enough time. Really, the tarmac tire there was enough mileage there to be able to really make a difference on the tarmac. And okay, those tires then had to be used on the tarmac stages on the Sunday again, but we didn't think we'd take much out of them, and ultimately it really helped us. Okay, it put us first on the road for the Saturday, which again came into the strategy a little bit, but we thought that actually we'd done a really good job on the Friday night, and being first on the road was something we just had to deal with, and drove really, really well. We were sweeping a little bit on Saturday morning, which was the reverse of the same rally last year where David was sweeping for Travis. So it kind of worked. What goes around comes around, I guess. But in the end, it did all come together, and it really, really has to at that level.
Oh, absolutely. Travis, one last one on the tyres, because it has been quite a big thing that's been mentioned this year. The guys, as I say, from the championship were on last week, and they're explaining trying to limit the number of tyres and things to try and make it a little bit more of a level playing field. I assume, you know, everybody wants more tyres, everyone wants more grip and things like that. Do you understand where the championship's coming from, trying to control the number of tyres that you guys use?
Oh, without a doubt. It honestly makes it more fun for us. I mean, that's I like being sideways. I like, you know, going into those stages and being like, all right, we might not, this tyre might not even hold. Because we're really running. I mean, David ran one set of tyres for the entire first day, electing to you know, save some tires for the second day. So honestly, he came into the third day of the rally with six fresh tires. I came in with two fresh tires and four pretty shag tires. So you know, we were only allowed 10 as the whole thing goes. So it is a very interesting thing, and it's not, they're not holding that the same for everyone down the field, only certain speed factors. So it makes it really it's going to be very interesting if another top European comes over and doesn't have the same rules that we have. But at the moment, you know, with all the Americans and the North American series being on the speed factors, it works well.
One thing that the guys are really, really concerned about, or not concerned about, what they're trying to encourage, and I know they're openly trying to push a junior category and things, is obviously, and this is nothing against David, again, you know, David and Craig are both mates of mine, both have been on the podcast and everything else, but, you know, what the championship wants is the American guys starting to come through. Obviously, it's great having yourself back, but they want to get juniors in. Do you feel a weight of responsibility, perhaps, Travis, to try and engage maybe some of the younger American guys to get back involved in rally?
You know, one of the really difficult things, and it was great for the sport in general, but Rallycross took most of the American sponsorship that was in rally. So most of your names, you know, your top drivers, your Tanner Faust, Ken Blocks, all went with kind of the manufacturer's decision to go Rallycross. For me, I'm in a fortunate position where, you know, my career was motorcycles, was two wheels. And, you know, I'm in a position to say, hey, look, I just love rally. I love driving through the woods. I love the different conditions. That's what I want to do. And, you know, kind of pay me or don't pay me, you know, or I'll pay. But this is where I'm going. So that's been a really cool thing for me. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of the other guys haven't come back. There's been a little bit of turmoil with the series and everything, you know, going from the Rally America to ARA and what series and this and that. But I know Ken Block really wants to come back. And I know definitely any driver loves that does rally and off-road loves to be in the woods. And hopefully the series will grow and get bigger, and, you know, we'll get more Americans and more Europeans as well.
I'd love to come over, but simply I haven't got the talent or the budget. But still, there you go. Maybe one day, maybe Robbie will hold my hand and get me across. But this, what?
I need him to hold my hand.
So, guys, it's only 2 weeks now to the Olympus Rally, which of course is, you know, a historic rally in many ways. But it was around the WRC at one point. Travis, your experience of the Olympus Rally, is this one that holds fond memories for you?
Oh, without a doubt. Honestly, this is was one of my better rallies. It's a lot more technical, which is generally, everyone thinks, oh man, you're a kamikaze driver, this and that, but all of my experience comes under 70 miles an hour, dirt bike stuff. So when we go in and they're working with aerodynamics and you know, just long, long straights at high speeds going into, you know, fours and you know, five minuses, that kind of stuff, it's always a little bit different. Or, you know, I had some experience, but still, that's my toughest point. So when you can do linked corners, kind of like the, you know, the old X Games course when McRae came over, those are definitely my best ones. And I feel like this is a good rally for me, although we don't have the notes. I haven't been there in, I think 7 years now. So, this, you know, this being my first full season back since then.
And it's going to be difficult for Robbie and I to, you know, to match the notes that David has. It's good roads for us, so we got to give her hell.
Well, that's what I was just about to go to Robbie next. Robbie, it's an event you did many years ago. I seem to remember now. You know, Travis has just touched upon it there. You start from scratch. It's actually your pace notebook is blank. How do you prepare for this one, my friend?
It's a good question. It is a great rally. Just to echo Travis's comments, really, I've done it a couple of times. Again, not for a long time. Good memories of it. It's like the northwest of the US is kind of like you travel 6,000 miles and you've not left home. You know, it's green, it rains a lot, it's grey, but you have beautiful, clear, sunny days sometimes, and lots of forestry. You could be in Wales or Scotland as well, but we'll work hard. Well, we've got some in-car stuff from the organisers actually run through the stages, a bit like in the UK, and give you a bit of an insight of the stages. We've got some notes from some roads we've used as test roads over the years. We've got a little bit. We're not at zero, but there's certainly a lot of work to be done for me between now and then, and for Travis and I actually on the event to try and do as much homework and research as we can and hit the ground running, really. We were testing up in that area not too long ago, so the roads are familiar in our minds, if not, you know, corner by corner. Certainly the nature and the feel of the rally is quite familiar, but we're always working on you know, pace notes. You know, yourself are a constantly evolving thing, and I don't think anyone can ever say they've learned it and they're not stopped changing things or playing around with things, and we're still definitely at that point, but we're there to, you know, we're there to be on the top step, and that's what we'll try and do.
Absolutely. Travis, now it's one for you, one for David. You guys are friends, and of course you're friends, but of course now you're fierce rivals now, aren't you? You've got one each. You're going to go toe-to-toe, obviously, all season. What's the information flow like? David is a very, very experienced, of course, test driver as well. Does he share information, or is that something now where you're in one team, but you are actually fighting one another?
Well, that was, you know, kind of from the beginning. David was honestly, I mean, my first time really getting in a true rally car. We're actually a Sweet Lamb with Lovell, and then a few months later when I was 17 years old, and the Subaru brought David over to really help me to kind of teach me and have me get kind of up to pace. And I think the first rally about 2 years ago, when we had a couple stages that were within, you know, a couple tenths of David, he said, "All right, good luck. Everything's, you know, we've been good to this point, and I'll do everything for you that I can. But, you know, we're not overlaying our, I'm not giving you my in-car anymore. We're not overlaying, you know, the telemetry and stuff like that. Like we had always done before." He goes, unless we're battling another, unless there's another manufacturer or something that gets involved, he goes, then, you know, that changes it a little bit. But, you've done your homework, and you're on your own if you want to get faster. So I think that's been awesome. I mean, he still helps out so much, and even Craig Drew, his co-driver, they've been the best mentors, and, you know, as it's progressed into rivals, you know, have been really awesome to us all the way through.
Fantastic. I suppose it's the same question for you, Robbie. You know, Craig Drew and I were teammates. We go back a long way. How has Drew been with you? Is he helping you out, or is he drew the line in the sand as well now?
No, he's been great, to be honest. We always kind of have that that feeling with rally where it's competitors against nature as opposed to competitors against each other, and it definitely feels like that. You're kind of out there against the elements and against the watch almost, as opposed to directly against each other. And Craig's been great, helping me sort of get back into it and pick up almost where I left off. But of course, with everything being new, a new team, a new driver, and events hadn't done for a number of years, he's been great. And to be fair, I'd like to think I'd have done the same for him or anyone else, but ultimately we know that that's not where it's, you know, we don't want to lose a rally because one of us hasn't seen a regulation or one of us does something daft that we've dropped the ball. You know, we want to win it on the stages. So he's been great, and you know, we've shared a few moments shouting and screaming at each other as you always do, but ultimately to this point it's been great.
Happy days. Listen, boys, I think having both driver and co-driver on, I think we've got away with it. I think it's kind of worked. I think it's been all right. So first, Travis, thank you so much for joining us for the first time on Absolute Rally. Would you come back again and talk to us again in the future?
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
No worries at all. Robbie, thank you again. And you know the door's always open for you, my friend. It goes without saying.
Thank you very much, Tony. Yeah, it's been good to talk to you. And yeah, don't leave it so long.
No worries at all. Boys, best of luck on the Olympus Rally. Brooks, we're going to go to a little break. And then we'll be back with Ian Campbell from the British Rally Championship.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangerondi Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangerondi Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. It's been a busy old show, and I can say that because I've got no idea what's gone before, because this is the first part of the show that's actually been recorded this week. So we're doing it arse about face, if I can say that. We've got a man back who's been with us before. He's been with us quite a bit last year. He was the man that some people called the manager of the band that was going to produce the difficult second album in 2017. But I know him as Ian Campbell, of course, the British Rally Championship manager. Oh, it's in fairness to give it its full title, because they've also now got a commercial back of the Preston MSA British Rally Championship. Congratulations, first and foremost, Ian, on securing a title sponsor for this year.
Thank you for that. And it's great having them on board, because they're so proactive. I was just looking at different figures today from the first round, and they gave away over 3,000 bits of product at the border counties, with ponchos and hats and antifreeze and coolant. And yeah, as long as it's yellow, they'll be there.
It does kind of hark back to the days of getting free stuff, doesn't it, on rallies? Because we've all got a memory. Do you know what? I found, obviously, we spoke about this off air. I've moved house in kind of about 9-10 months ago, and we're still unpacking stuff. And I found one of those big sponge fingers from a while ago. Yeah.
You see, the one that I remember being the first one for giving stuff away is Rothmans. But seeing as I was only 8 at the time, I couldn't really take any product.
Yeah, you weren't a heavy smoker, I think it's fair to say. Not at the age of 8 anyway. Not at the age of 8. But listen, I flippantly, with my introduction, but you and I have both spoke about this. This year was going to be a tough one. It got off to possibly the toughest start that you could have had when you lost your opening round.
Yeah, well, it was a bit careless. But no, we had a... You know, the circumstances overtook us with the mid-Wales stages. The Brick and Steel Border Counties stepped in with 10 weeks' notice and delivered a fantastic event, you know, for us. Standing there in Jedburgh on that Friday night with the 8 or 9 minutes fireworks display going off and having the cars heading out to the dark stages, you did start to think maybe the difficult second album is coming together. So it was good. It was, what a competition it was as well. I mean, there was, I think, 6 different drivers set fastest stage times over 9 stages. The lead changed 5 times, and that's just for the guys at the front. The juniors was just okay. Oscar Solberg went away with I think he won by a minute come the end of it, but at points there was only nearly seconds between about 6 of them. So what that means is we knew going into the border counties that we couldn't say who was going to win, but it hasn't changed coming into the Pirelli this weekend. Really haven't got any idea as to who could be top step of the podium and who's going to come out with the classes as well.
The Pirelli is a special one for us. We will have talked about it quite considerably, of course, at the top of this podcast, because we've got a former winner of it in Ryan Champion.
And he hasn't mentioned that, has he?
He's mentioned it once or twice. And he will point out, by the way, it was full international status, and there was people like Mark Higgins, David Higgins, I think Tapio Laukkanen was there, Martin Rowe was there. So if I was Ryan, I'll be honest with you, I'd have T-shirts with it printed on, and I'd wear them every day. And you talk about giving out free stuff, I'd be giving them out to passers-by who had no interest in rallying, to be perfectly honest with you. But the Pirelli is one which is kind of a staple now, isn't it, of the British Rally Championship. Kielder, as we know it, Killer Kielder, the Ditches, everything else. It's all been said before, but it does feel, and this is no disrespect to any of the other round, it feels like a proper BRC round, the Pirelli.
It's, you know, it's a big event. It's got, you know, a huge sponsor there with Pirelli. It's got a lot of backing with at the start when they introduced the rally to their family fun day at the factory. Then it's got it's 100 stage miles, but it's only 8 stages. So it's not only got the reputation of Kielder to deal with, it's long stages. So it's going to be ones that really bring up the concentration levels of the crews. And that'll probably be something that's telling maybe the juniors and the cadets, because they'll not be used to dealing with sort of a 15-mile stage, a 12-mile stage, and things like that. And also, on each day, it's only a remote tire zone that they've got. They've got no service. So when they leave H&H on Saturday morning, until they come back on Saturday evening about 5 o'clock, apart from being able to change the tyres out at Kielder Water, that's it from a service perspective, unless they're carrying the parts in the car. So it is it's a proper challenge from there. But also the event organisers are recognising that it's an event, and we're stopping off in Bellingham on Saturday in the town centre there, and they're putting on giveaways and some autograph signing sessions and things like that. And then they're finishing right in the middle of Brampton on Sunday at lunchtime, where they've got car clubs coming for displays, they've got the big TV screen which will be showing highlights of the event, and we've pressed on there with their simulator as well, where you can sit and try and set a faster stage time, and if you win that, you get a rally school experience, which can't be too bad for a spectator.
I might need to get up there for that one, to be honest with you. just for that opportunity alone. But I think what excited me, I'll be honest with you, right, and I was really, really excited, because was there a rumour at one point, was it perhaps mooted that Malcolm Wilson was going to do the rally?
That rumour did come out, but it did come out at 9 o'clock on the 1st of April.
Ah, there you go.
That got rid of that one fairly quickly.
Right.
So yes, it would have been very nice. There were stories going about that we may have another M Sport car arriving, and of course with Matthew out last year, who did such a great job getting onto the podium. It would have been great to get him to come back out as well, because I think it's a free weekend from Bentley Racing.
I think it is, yeah, it is. I know, obviously, Argentina's on that weekend, but I'm not. GT racing is Ryan and Jack. I've got nothing on GTs. So
I don't know anything about it either.
No, I know nothing about it. But the depth again that we look at, you know, the top end of the field. We've got we had Tom Cave on when it was announced about him bringing the R5 high-end eye to the BRC for the first time. Did that feel like a little bit of a feather in the cap as well? The fact that you'd managed to entice another brand.
It's great. It really is fantastic news, and it's brilliant that they've registered as a manufacturer with the BRC as well. So they're showing their intent. They've got a busy week this week in Kielder with a very big test planned in the car. So they're not coming here just to make up numbers. They're very much in it to win it. And then the other one that said as well was Bryn Nielsen, who's making all the noises of yes, I'm coming over to see what my pace is like against the BRC guys, he says, but he knows that he's on Ollen's pace anyway in WRC2, and so he's very much over to show us that the Norwegians can come over and make a real noise. So there's a lot of competition out there, because Fredrik's going to try and defend his title from last year. Bogey's just had a great result at the Speyside at the weekend there, and the stages up in Elgin are very, very fast. So they're like the Kielder stages, although they haven't got the length. They're high speed stages, and he won by, I think, 40 seconds from Desi Henry. Which it was great to see Desi actually get a result, because he's such a bad start to the season. And then you got Ewan Thorburn and Paul Beaton, who were third, and their confidence was lifting all the time. But that's just some of the names we're putting out. I mean, there's 17 R5 cars going to be taking the start on Saturday, which is a real show that's going to be hitting the road when they get out into the woods.
I don't want to get bogged down in the whole seeding thing, but I find it, I'm just looking at the Pirelli International. Again, that's something else which I think we probably need to mention. International status once again this year.
Yes. You see, that's just for Ryan's T-shirt. But there's a Celtic Cup round, Celtic Trophy, sorry, round for the FIA. So it's great that, it's back at international status, and it's the first time that the Celtic Trophy's come over to mainland UK. And it'll be interesting to see just how that goes down and come the end of the year where the winner comes from.
Absolutely. Now, where I was going to go with this, it's staggering when you look at Keith Crone in car 6, a three-time British Rally champion.
Yes. Yes.
Car
and
6.
He's won the event three times as well, I think.
Yeah.
From there. So, but then, you know, Keith had punctures at the border counties, which kind of ruined his weekend from there. And he didn't have a great season in BRC, last year. So when you look at the seeding, you've got to go on what the anticipated performance is going to be. And I suppose Keith is a big unknown to us at the moment. He's got such a pedigree. He's got such class there. But just over the last 18 months, probably in the mainland UK, it's not come through in results.
Yeah.
And that's where we've had to go with it.
Yeah, it's just, I find that really, really telling. I think that tells a story within itself when you look at, David, we've just been talking about David Bogie, of course, as well. You look at those guys who are, dare I say, stalwarts. It's fair to say now, isn't it? Because, we I suppose it's the next generation of, we had the likes of Mark Higgins and people like that who were kind of the benchmarks. And, Keith was, when he was coming through, was fighting with Mark. Now, in some ways, he's kind of took that mantle away from Mark.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not to be sniffed at being a three-time champion. But that's where the pace is just now. It's really, really hot. And there's Marty McCormack set a fastest stage time at the last round. So, and I think he's down at 8 or something like that. So he's got pace in there. So is Ocean Price. And then, Rhys Yates has had his best result ever. So there's a lot of people learning their trade. And have taken their 12 months of, if you like, from last year, and are now starting to really show what they can do behind the wheel.
I think the other thing that's going to be fascinating as well, of course, is the junior section. Is the 208 the R2 to have? Have M Sport really nailed it now with the R2T? Of course, with Oscar Solberg out in one of those as well. But there's plenty of 208s around. Where do you see the weekend panning out for the juniors?
I can take a guess at the R5 class, probably, but the juniors, you don't know. I mean, Oscar showed the class at the Brick and Steel Border Counties. He was just on it, right through. Even when he had problems, he managed it. And you would think that he would be used to the high-speed nature of stages. So going from there, he's got to go in as the absolute favourite. But I don't know, it's like William Crichton, if it on paper, shouldn't be challenging because William hasn't got the experience in gravel, and yet he was right in the mix 6 weeks ago. Callum Devine is somebody that I rate really, really highly, and so I think he's got stuff to come from there. Marty Gallagher is so match fit because he's got that car out just about every second weekend, but he's learning his gravel pace as well, and Marion Evans is kind of a dark horse because we know Marion's got the pace. But it's not transferred into results. And then, the other Peugeot that's there is Cameron Davies, who just seemed to be constantly banging his head against a brick wall in Jedburgh. But the every now and again, there'd be a time would appear. So if he gets a smooth event and puts it together, goodness knows where he could be. So I think that's probably a long-winded answer of saying I'm sitting on the fence.
I was just about to say, you could have just said I've got splinters in my backside, I'm not going to give you an answer. Can you just explain to us this year about the changes as well? Obviously, we have people all over the world that listen to us and are quite passionate as well about the British Rally Championship. The cadet class, how is that now kind of separated off from the juniors?
Now, that's a long story I could give you as well. But what we've recognised from last year's experience, which Tony, that we learned a lot last year, and we still are learning right through. But the pace of the juniors last year was very, very hot, and so we'd four guys that were really quick, and then we'd other people that come into the British Rally Championship that, if you like, were just they were graduating, and it was the first time that they'd been on the longer events, first times with reconnaissance and things like that. And they were actually getting very disillusioned when they looked at the stage times of what was being set by the Adams and by the Twingo and things like that. And so the idea behind the cadet class was also to take something for the older R2s and the R2 1-litre turbo national car, and also the Adam Cup car, because these cars are down on power compared to the cars of Oscar Solberg or the 208s. And so by having the car that's slightly less, or it's got less performance, it should be probably about 1.5 seconds per kilometre off these other guys, you're taking them out of that competition by having their own class to go and battle in there whilst they're learning the events, whilst they're learning about reconnaissance and things like that. And they've still got a good prize to go for at the end of the year.
Fantastic. Now, you said you actually said, your words, not mine, that you felt more comfortable perhaps predicting the winner of the overall event in the R5 category. Can I make sure that you're nowhere near a fence and put you completely and utterly on the spot? You give us your winnery.
That could come back and bite me on the bottom. I think we could see a repeat of last year's winner in Frederick. I would, having watched him at the weekend and seen his pace from last year, I would like to see Bogey take the top step.
David Bogey. There you go. I'm actually going to make a note of that.
Great. Magic.
Listen, keep up the good work. Again, we do appreciate your time coming on Absolute Rally. We will get you on again soon. I do promise you that. Folks, thank you for the download. You know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter. You can join us on our new website, of course, where you can listen to old episodes and things like that, which is absoluterally.co.uk. And you can still get in contact with us via Facebook, of course, which is facebook.com/Absolute Rally. We will be back same time, same place, in your same podcast hole next week.